I appreciate all of you attending the workshop this afternoon. A question I have for you, other than the fact that it gives CE credits. All right, I know how this game works. Anybody want to share with me why they are here at this particular workshop? Yes, sir.
I'm a new partner and interested in buy celebrating.
All right. Anybody else?
Because you answered that question in the first.
Because I answered that question. And later on, I have a book that I'm going to be giving away. No, that's not true. It was kind of fun. I'm going to be mentioning employer-owned life insurance during my presentation, so it's just kind of a layup for me. Let me ask you this. How many of you in the room are in the habit of asking your clients, your business owner clients, for a copy of their business governing document or, if they have a separate buy-sell agreement, the buy-sell agreement? How many of you ask? Okay, just a couple, just a few. Okay, well, the purpose of my presentation, now, of course, you know, I can't help myself. I'm a lawyer. I work for Guardian Life Insurance. I do not give tax or legal advice. But part of my role in the advanced underwriting department is I review buy-sell agreements, business governing documents, estate planning documents, you name it. I have seen it all over the course of my career. Okay, but I think what you'll find, or I'm hoping for those of you who didn't raise your hand, I'm hoping that you'll walk away kind of realizing, there may be some value added that I can take back to my clients. It's a great door opener. I've had a lot of advisors tell me that clients always think there's a fee associated with it. Okay, well, you mean an attorney, one of those New York City lawyers, like where you live matters? I don't even live in New York anymore. I live in Denver. I just moved from Manhattan. What a different world, you know? What a different world. Bought a car after 14 years. But anyway, that's not why we're here. But I really want you to walk away with really seeing the value that you can bring back to a client. It doesn't cost, I know the Guardian employees, anything, advisors, you know, here you go, client. We had an attorney look over this. Here's the good, bad, and the ugly about it. And here's some things that maybe we can do to improve the situation. All right, so kind of let's get started. I have the presentation. We have a sign-up sheet because of its length and the specimen. It's not actually even a specimen buy-sell agreement. It is an actual document that I redacted all the information from that can be made available. Just don't leave without signing up to get the information. All right? Oh, yes, here we go, my disclosure. I do not give tax or legal advice. All right, let's get going here. So this is just the probability of death of one of two business owners actually passing away before what? Age 65. A lot of clients are under the impression that, well, this won't happen to me. This doesn't happen to me. I flew home Sunday from New Hampshire from attending the funeral of a 26-year-old. All right? We all know, we all work in this profession. It does happen to you. It does happen to your clients. But this is the probability of one business owner passing away prior to age 65. So, first of all, and I want to make this interactive. I hate just talking, okay? We only have 50 minutes, but what do you think is a buy-sell agreement? Now, I'm always thinking in terms of a question that you ask your clients. You know, you ask a lawyer, and I won't shut up, all right? For the sake of brevity, it's not something that I often say, all right? But if you ask a client, what is a buy-sell agreement, okay? What do you think it is? Anybody? Okay, even simpler than that. When I practiced law, I did a lot of estate planning. I did a lot of business continuity planning, and I wanted to really keep it simple. What's estate planning? It's about giving away your stuff. Clients get that. Oh, my stuff. It's about giving away your stuff. Well, a buy-sell agreement is nothing other than a business owner's will. Quotation marks. Okay? Now, I'm going to mention this during my presentation. I am an ardent believer that business succession planning and estate planning go hand in hand. You cannot do one without the other. They must be coordinated. Okay, so in this context, when I say will, more often than not, I am talking about what? Lifetime transfers. Okay, same with estate planning. You know, I'm of the opinion when you're dead, all bets are off. So you better do your planning during your life. But in its most simplest form, a buy-sell agreement is nothing more than the last will and testament or will of the business owner. So why do we need these puppies? What do you think? Continuity of management makes sense, right? What else? We need liquidity. I happen to own some farmland in Portersville, Ohio. Anybody ever heard of Portersville, Ohio? Come on, I got a book here. Of course you haven't. Do you think when I die, the IRS wants my land in Portersville, Ohio? No, they want cash 9 months from the date of death. All right, so liquidity. We need to establish a fair and reasonable price. I can assure you the majority of buy-sell agreements that I review fail to meet this simple yet very, very important requirement. We need to determine the value of the decedent's interest for what? For a federal estate tax reason. We need to, quote, peg the value for estate tax planning purposes. I'll have some producers just send me a document with the one simple question of, hey, Cynthia, will this agreement peg the value for estate tax planning purposes for my client? Well, let me take a look and we'll find out if, in fact, it does. In a perfect world, we want settlement of the estate to occur quickly, and we want as little conflict as possible. In a perfect world. Okay? Now, what are some of the questions that are important? First of all, structure of a buyout. Now, I know in one of the other workshops, I think they talked about, you know, your cross purchase, your redemption. I'm going to very, very quickly go over those. But, you know, what is the structure in the agreement? What are the triggering events? We'll talk more about that. Most of the time, what do you see in your clients' buy-sell agreements as far as triggering events? What do you see?
Death.
What's the other? Disability. Related to disability, what should you see? A very, very good definition of disability, which I can assure you in most of the documents that I agree is not, it's not there, that I review, it's not there. You might see what? Right of first refusal provisions? But I can assure you that you do not see a full comprehensive list that, in my opinion, a buy-sell agreement should have. Now, the agreement we're going to go over this afternoon, I thought was pretty doggone good. Okay, not perfect. None of them are. But I've seen some really bad one-pagers to some very well-drafted agreements. So you need to know the triggerings. The valuation method. Valuation method, of course, is huge. Will it take into account growth in the business? What type of business is it? Are they going to use certified appraisers? Are we using a fixed value? We'll talk about that. I don't like to see a fixed value in a buy-sell agreement, right? We don't want to see that. What else do we need to know? The terms of sale. Is it a lump sum? Is it a, you know, partial down payment? Balance due via a promissory note? Are the terms of sale actually the same for what? Each triggering event, they do not have to be. Personally, I hate an installment obligation at the death of a business owner. Now, why do you think that is? If you all talk at once, I'm not going to be able to hear you all. Yes, sir. Exactly. Not only do they want the money, more likely than not, they need the money. Essentially, the surviving business owners remain what? In business with the family and vice versa. So for me, you get a memo from me, I might put something in, hey, you know, you want to do an installment obligation for a lifetime transfer, but maybe if we can make a lump sum payment at death, that might be better. So we need to know the terms of sale in the agreement. What about business operations and governance agreements? Most of the agreements I review are not separate buy-sell agreements. I personally prefer a separate buy-sell agreement. Separate from what? The business governing document. Separate from the shareholder agreement, the partnership agreement, the operating agreement. But probably 7 to 8 out of times, buy-sell restrictions are going to be contained in that agreement. And estate planning. I can't help myself. I was an estate planner in a former life. Again, it's just my opinion. Estate planning must be coordinated. How many times have you had a business owner say that, you know, they want to leave but their business to a daughter or a son? Well, what does their estate plan say? First of all, it goes to who? The spouse. Some spouses have the financial acumen to run a business. Some of them do not. Coordination must be coordinated. What else?
Wait.
Yes, we have a wait.
Which would take precedent? The the Will Family Trust or the buy-sell agreement?
What would take? See, what's going to happen is when you have a buy-sell case. If I own a business, my interest. Thank you. I'm going to go sailing, right? My interest in the business does what? It's going to pass to. It's going to pass under the terms of my estate plan. Okay, and then there'll be a contractual obligation, hopefully, if the agreement is written correctly, for the surviving owners to buy the decedents out. Okay.
What if they don't agree?
Well, if they don't agree, then I would say that the asset, the business interest, is going to pass pursuant to the estate plan and not pursuant to the agreement.
So the wife's going to end up
with the shares or units or partnership interests. Mm-hmm. So what documents do you need? I get a call. Randy calls me up and says, hey, Cynthia, I have a business owner case. I'm going to tell him this is what I need. I need to see the client's buy-sell agreement. I need to see any business governing documents. These are the documents you need to be asking your clients for. I mean, why not? You know, they're going to have a team of experts review them on their behalf. What about employment agreements? I see a lot of provisions with respect to, I just reviewed an agreement the other day, going on and on and on about a junior shareholder, then made reference to an employment agreement. It was a very one-sided agreement, okay? But we need to make sure that there isn't anything in the employment agreement that might contradict anything under the terms of the buyout agreement. Insurance policy information. Very, very, very important, right? For a couple of reasons. First of all, is the agreement funded? Okay. Is it funded? Maybe it's funded. But then is the policy structured in the right way? If the agreement, buy-sell agreement, says we're doing a redemption plan and I have cross-own policies, that's a big whoops. It's a legal term of art. If you don't have a license to practice law, please don't use it. Right? Okay? So we have to make sure these things are consistent. And there's that estate plan again that she keeps harping about. Okay? Now, let me tell you my process. Had to do a little redacting here. I have so many different pairs of glasses, one to read, one to see, I tell you. Okay. So an agreement comes my way. Now, I had to redact the law firm that, of course, did this agreement. First page tells me what? Right. It's an LLC. It's an LLC. Okay? I want to know what kind of entity that I'm dealing with here. Now, why might that be important? Because it makes a difference as to possibly what type of buy-sell arrangement, if the one that the clients have is no longer appropriate for their situation, maybe we should be doing something else. A lot of people don't know that with a redemption plan is when the corporation buys the shares, with a C corporation, you do not get what? A step up in cost basis. With an S corporation, you actually can, assuming certain tax elections are made. So the first thing I want to see is I want to know what kind of entity that I am dealing with. Who drafted the agreement? Oh, yes, sir. You have to, no, what I was saying is with an S corporation, you can actually get a step up in cost basis. It's a 1377A2 election. If you have, you know, want to talk about that over a cocktail sometime, it's much more interesting. Okay. But in all seriousness, it's kind of important to know. 1377A2 election. Who drafted the agreement? In this particular agreement, the law firm was on page one. No, I like that. How many times have you seen agreements where you have no idea if an attorney even drafted the agreement? No idea. None. Client did it. LegalZoom did it. Rocket Doc? Okay, I want to see the firm. Is the firm proud of their work product? And more importantly to me, what do? I'm going to look up the firm. I want to see the attorneys that they have on board and what they specialize in. Now, this particular agreement, is there a table of contents or do we just jump right into the agreement? All right? And this was really nicely drafted. I didn't have to go flipping around and reading all these things that weren't relevant to the purposes of my reviewing it. Everything is right there for me. I know transferability of interest, right of first refusal. It talks about life and DI. It talks about tag along, drag along. These are things that I'm going to really want to comment on when I'm putting together a review. Miscellaneous. What law governs the agreement? Are there arbitration? Are there dispute resolution clause? These are all things that I want to see in a really well-drafted agreement. In this case, I can go to the table of contents and see all that. So my job is done. I don't have to read it. No, that's not true. Okay? So, when was the agreement executed? In this particular agreement, it was executed on January 26, 2011. Why is the date important? Why is the date important, do you think? Thank you. Who said it? I heard valuation somewhere in the room. Value of the business. How many times have I seen a buy-sell agreement with a fixed price that was drafted 20 years ago, and it had the usual language that the parties agree on an annual basis to review and update the, you know, certificate of value on the back of the document, blah, 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 blah. And they never do. Okay, what else? Is that valuation still valid? Are the business owners even the same? How many of you have had clients where one business owner exits, new business owners come in? So the date can really tell me, as soon as I see a date, I have these questions that I automatically are going to go through my head. Are the ownership interests the same? I talked about estate planning and business continuity planning, and you have your clients that do what? I was on the phone after lunch with a case where the brothers want to do what? They want to make gifts of the business to their children, okay? Right? So are the owners even the same? All of this having to do with the date. Okay, who are the parties to the agreement? Now, I know this seems really basic, but I can tell you. I've been reviewing documents for about 18 years now, and as an advanced sales attorney in a home office, that means what? I review documents from all over the country. All over the country. It's great. I no longer have to draft. I can just, sit in an ivory tower and say, oh, this was awful. No, that's not true. But it's true. I mean, I review things from all over the country. So who are the parties to the agreement? Partners, members, shareholders, key employee, family member, maybe a third-party vendor. Now, I know one thing that I look for and that I see all too often is when I have business entities. There's nothing wrong, by all means, of having, your LLC and your LLC are the members of this LLC. But the document says absolutely nothing about for purposes of death. Tell me how a business entity dies. You need to put in the agreement that for purposes of specific triggering events, I mean the managing partner of or the managing member of. So who are the parties to the agreement? And this one really gets me. For those of you who have reviewed these, have all the relevant parties even signed? You can't mess this up, right? But you can. Have all the relevant parties even signed? You're committed to buy my interest out and vice versa. I seem to be show up at the attorney's office to execute the document. You were at the Taggart Symposium and forgot, and we think we have a valid agreement. Well, there's no legal obligation. Okay, seems basic, but I'm telling you, these are things that I see. So who are the parties to the agreement? What law? Now, do you think the law is important? I get an agreement, I look at the date, I immediately turn to the back to see if there's a schedule of beneficial ownership. You would think that there would be, but there's not always. I look at what? What law? Now, why do you think that is important? What did you guys eat for lunch? I ate the same thing and I'm awake.
Not Diet Coke.
Is it a common law state? Or is it what? Thank you. If I see a community property state, and I'm going to have to get really loud on them, Randy, because I'm losing them. So, community property, what do I want to see on an agreement from a community property state. Attorneys can't answer in the front row. What do I want to see? Spousal signatures. I want to see that the spouses have signed off that they agree to be bound by the terms, blah, 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 of the agreement. Community property states. Again, I sit in the ivory tower and I review the documents from all over the country. I want to know. I want to know. What else? Ah, the party's ownership interests. This might be important. Remember I told you when I sit down to get an agreement, I flip to the back and hopefully I'll see a schedule of beneficial interest, capital contributions. Do you always see that? No. But this agreement, I get excited about this stuff. I know it's kind of quirky, but I do like it. Are they majority owners or are they minority owners? Now, I'm going to get my copy because I believe it's stapled. See, this is really cool. For if you're a geek like me, this is really cool. Majority, minority. This was the schedule that I saw at the back of the document. Take a look at that. Now, what do you think immediately would come to your mind if you had no life like me and you reviewed these for fun? What do you think I want to see?
You've got two real names.
Well, I mean, I had to redact. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a book for you. What do I see there? I see 50% and I see a bunch of minority owners. So what do you think my mind is thinking that I want to see in this agreement? Tag and drag along rights. What are those? And I was very, very excited, right? Drag along rights were on page 19 of this agreement, which again, if you want it, you can obtain a copy. So these are just things I'm writing in the margin before I even dig into the agreement. So I write down, tag and drag, question mark. Are they in the agreement? Look at that, drag along rights, page 19, under 7.5. I'm a very happy camper. I was like, this attorney really was all over what they needed to do on this agreement. Same thing for the minority owners. They had tag along rights. Real quick, I don't know, I'm assuming everyone knows what that is, but if you don't, here, just raise your head and say, what are you talking about? You know, you may be excited, but we're not. Okay, so this is important. So a drag-along right really favors a majority owner. Okay, let's say they get an offer from an outside third party to buy their interest. Well, the minority owners are over here saying, you know, if the third party wants to purchase the company, but the minority owners say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to sell. Well, guess what? They get dragged along in the sale. Okay, so the majority owner gets to drag the minority owners along in the sale. Conversely, a tag along right favors who? The minority owners. Now I get an outside third party offer to just buy your interest. The heck with those minority people. Well, guess what? The minority owners get to do what? Tag along in the sale on the same terms and conditions as a majority owner. Now, legal opinion differs. You know, some attorneys will say, you know, you don't need both. Or, you know, that's between your client and the attorney. But if I see a schedule of beneficial interest with majority and minority owners, I'm thinking to myself, are tag and drag along rights in this agreement? If so, you know, why did the attorney include them? And if not, maybe why did the attorney not include them? So that's a tag and a drag-along right. And this agreement had that. Now, how is the buy-sell agreement structured? How many of you do a lot of work in the business succession planning market? Okay. Cynthia, how many? No, I'm kidding. I want you to understand this because you can bring a lot of value added back to your clients by working in this particular marketplace. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these because there are a lot of things that I want to do with respect to the agreement. But essentially, there are a number of different kinds. You have entity, you have a stock redemption. All that means is that what? The company purchases the interest. Okay, a cross purchase. The business owners, right, purchase the interest. You can have a wait and see approach. You can have what we call a special purpose LLC, which is very, very, you know, handy these days in a world of what? Clients may not have estate tax problems, but they always have what?
Litigation.
Thank you. Litigation, asset protection, creditor protection. For that reason alone, I might, in fact, the call after lunch, I recommended a special purpose LLC. So I just want to blow through these real quickly, okay? Redemption plan, it is just an agreement between the business and the owners, okay? And at the death or lifetime withdrawal event, the company is going to buy the interest. Now, this is what won me the book. You know, when I was sitting there, I'm like, why not, right? Employer-owned life insurance. When you have a redemption plan, the company is what? The owner and the beneficiary of the policy. And when you have an employer-owned life insurance, you have to comply with the employer-owned life insurance rules under 101J. That's a presentation in and of itself. But as I believe it was Jerry, I believe his presentation this morning when I said 101J, what that means is that if these certain requirements are not met, the death benefit loses its what? There you go, it becomes taxable. Okay, so this is a huge issue, right? But a redemption plan, owner and beneficiary is a business. And this is just a schematic. I don't have enough time to go through all this. But essentially, again, the buy-sell agreement between the corporation and the owners. Owner B dies. B's interest in the corporation, the shares do what? Pass to the estate, all right? And then the corporation takes the money and buys them, okay? What are some potential issues? You might have dividend treatment of the redemption amount. Your loss of a step up in cost basis. Does everyone understand that? Loss of a step up in cost basis with a C corporation, not necessarily with an S corporation. Okay. What else do we have here? You might have the corporate alternative minimum tax. In my opinion, when I'm dealing with a business owner case, I'm trying to structure a buyout so that the life insurance actually isn't owned by the entity for the very reason that business assets are what? Subject to who? Business creditors. Now, I'm not saying don't ever structure a plan like that, but my initial thought is to see if we can come up with another way. And if we can, we're going to do a redemption. Okay, but remember, you know, it's asset protection right now is just huge. It's just huge. Okay. Cross-purchase, everyone gets this. The business owners own a policy on each other. In this particular case, you do get a step-up in cost basis. Why? Well, I'm buying your interest. I'm the purchaser. I get the step-up in cost basis. Okay, what are some issues with a cross-purchase? You know the number of policies that are needed. Okay, here's the formula. Everyone knows the formula from their American College courses. Okay, you may have transfer for value issues. Now, that was the answer that Jerry was looking for this morning. But you may have transfer for value issues, okay? One of the most significant ones is that a transfer to a what? A co-shareholder is not an exception to the rule. So if you have a situation where the clients have a redemption plan that they later want to change to a cross-purchase plan, and they're a corporation, you can't do it. It's not an exception.
C-Corp?
A corporation? C-Corp? If we have a redemption plan, but now we decide, for whatever reason, we're going to do a cross-purchase, the corporate-owned policies cannot be transferred, the one on me cannot be transferred to you, and vice versa, without running afoul the transfer for valuable. Yes? Does that make sense? Yes?
What about where a lot of these buy-sell agreements involve buying out a spouse and death without an insurance policy? Basically, it's a buyout based upon continued fee generation or something like that. How is that treated to the spouse?
I'm not quite sure I follow your scenario. When I'm dealing with spouses, let's say, for example, I have two spouses and a third party. You and your wife and I own a business. Okay, in a family situation, you may not even need what? A formal buy-sell agreement. Okay, your death, you're going to pass your shares to who? To your spouse. Okay, but in some situations, and I've had cases where that third party, actually, they're kind of like, well, wait a minute. Why don't I have the option to also purchase? So I don't understand what you mean by I don't see a transfer for value here.
Two partners have a buy-sell agreement to buy out the spouse if I die.
So they have a cross-purchase.
Cross-purchase, but it's predicated upon ongoing earnings, say, over 5 years. What's the buyout tax implications for the spouse? Is that all ordinary income to her?
Well, no. I mean, at death, what happens to an asset, most assets, at the date of death? They get a step up to what? fair market value. There's no tax consequence for the spouse. Okay, you die, I'm going to take the proceeds, and your shares will have gotten a step up in cost basis. Okay?
So now the spouse is just going to get money from the partnership?
Well, I would prefer not. I would prefer a buyout. But you're right. If you don't have a situation where there's not a formal buyout, then it'll be taxable to them.
But it's a buyout agreement over 5 years based upon continued earnings.
Then it's an installment sale, just like any other installment sale. Taxation, part return of principal, part of interest. Again, I'm not a big fan of the installment obligation at death. Okay, I only have 15 minutes. Executive bonus plans, for those of you who work with executive in the executive benefits field, right? How many times have you gotten a call from a client that says that they want to do something for themselves as the business owner, right? Can I do this executive bonus plan? What can I do and get a what? A tax deduction, all right? Well, you can't. If you're a pass-through entity, too bad, so sad. All right, another legal phrase that I paid a lot of money for law school to learn that. Too bad, so sad. If you're a C-Corp, we have different tax brackets, and then you may be able to get some leveraging. Okay, for purposes of time, I don't want to go through the wait and see. Okay. I just want to briefly mention this special purpose LLC. How many of you have heard of this concept? How many of you have heard of this concept prior to today? Okay, a few of you. Okay, real quickly, because this is important, and this is getting a lot of play out in the field, at least in the space that I work in. You have a situation where the business owners, they have a corporation, okay? More likely than not, they have probably more than three shareholders. How many of you have heard of a trustee cross-purchase arrangement? Okay, well, with a trustee cross-purchase arrangement, you can have transfer for value issues. Okay, this particular type of buyout eliminates those issues. Okay, it provides asset protection because you are having your clients establish an LLC for the sole purpose of owning nothing other than the life insurance for purposes of the buyout. Okay, so if in fact there's litigation, the best remedy that the creditor can get against that LLC, depending upon the particular jurisdiction, is a charging order. What does a charging order entitle a creditor to?
Distributions.
If what?
If there are any.
Exactly. Okay, so again, if I can take the life insurance out of the client's business entity, put it into a separate entity, then I'm able to put a wrapper around it of asset protection and protect the assets in the business. This, again, is a separate presentation, but I wanted to bring it to your attention because I'm seeing it a lot, I'm recommending it a lot, okay? Does it fit in every situation? No, but it's important to understand and that you have it and know, oh my gosh, that is something to consider for my clients. And this just goes through how it works. Okay. Now, I want to get through some of the things, what I call the what were we thinking of arrangements. Your clients, what were we thinking? How about this one? There's no agreement and there's no life insurance. Ever see that? I do. Sure. It's what? A handshake deal? Yeah, that'll get you far because everybody always gets along at the death of a business owner. It's amazing how just everyone comes together, not. Right. What about life insurance, but no agreement? You and I, again, picking on you. Let's pick on her. You and I. We own, right, a policy on each other. There's no contractual agreement that says that you have to buy out my spouse, right? You get the money, and then what do? Run. You set up shop down the street, okay? There's no agreement. What about that one? I love this one there and this one, right? There's an agreement, but no life insurance. And then you go through all these wonderful provisions that say, you know, the parties are going to buy out the other's interest. And the question I have, of course, is with what? Right? Your good looks? Right? No. So, you know, we have life insurance, but no agreement. And then, of course, we have an agreement and no life insurance, which is the majority of the agreements that I see. They are not funded. Great opportunity for you, of course, to fund clients' existing buy-sell agreements or with a new client to recommend the type of buy-sell agreement they need and then have it properly funded.
Can I ask a quick
Of course.
What do you do in a situation where maybe you've got a couple of partners, three, and two of them are insurable at once?
You know, I get that question. Essentially, what do you do when you have an uninsurable business owner? Okay, there's not a lot of options. In fact, I was talking with an annuity wholesaler the other day about possibly using an annuity, but that's a discussion for another time. But that's an option. I have also seen where you get additional insurance on the owners that are insurable. Okay? So in the event that the uninsurable owner dies, maybe if you have a permanent policy, you have some cash value that can be used to at least make a down payment to the decedent's estate. Okay? I've seen that. Well, yeah, I mean, you can certainly always do a sinking fund, but it's like anything. I mean, like you all know, will the money, the right amount of money be available at the time of death? But by all means, you can, or a combination. But those are hard situations, I understand. Okay, when is a bite? Now, this agreement really did really, really well. We had right of first refusal provisions, and that's pretty common when you see a governing document. We want to see some right of first refusal provisions. I have seen some that don't contain them, but that's pretty standard. Now, death. Okay, now this was a really cool agreement. Okay, death for the minority owners. They were obligated, the estate was obligated to sell all of their interest for the minority owners. The majority owners, though, were not obligated to sell their entire interest. Their estate was actually going to be entitled to retain a third of the shares. Okay, so we had some creative drafting going on here. This wasn't your usual type of buy-sell agreement where we have an all-out buyout. And clients are under the assumption that that's how it works, and that's how it has to work for all the owners. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't at all. So this was some really creative drafting, in my opinion. Okay, so minority owners, yes, you have to sell all your shares. Majority owners, the estate is entitled to retain a third. What else? Disability. Now, that applies to any member. Now, what the definition makes me crazy when I see an agreement in which disability is what? Not defined. But if there is a disability, what do you think one of the worst definitions of disability is to see in a buy-sell agreement? Who said? Social Security. Someone said the absolutely Social Security, the worst definition. I'm like, who put this in the agreement? I'm very animated in my office. When I talk to the advisors, I keep myself together. Randy never sees me going like this. Okay. But I'm doing it. Social Security, seriously. Okay? But this agreement has some very well-drafted provisions. Okay? I can't read all that without my glasses. But the gist of it is that you want to see what? The definition in a disability buyout policy. That's the best definition. Disability buyout policy. Not disability income, right? Do you see that? Oh, yeah, of course. And, you know, and they think, oh, disability income. Well, I can assure you that the elimination period for a DBO policy is very different from a DI policy, right? Okay? So the definition is critically important for disability. Now, when is the buy-sell event triggered? This wasn't just your usual death and disability. This had termination of employment. But it got even better. Like, I was really getting excited. I was on my third cup of coffee. All right. First of all, in this agreement, it only applied to the minority owners. Again, every triggering event does not have to apply in equal force to all of the owners. Okay? It does not. The terms of sale do not have to apply the same with respect to all the owners. You get some attorneys that do some really creative drafting depending upon the client's situation. Okay, so we had voluntary termination. You know, these are the things I'm thinking of. I put together a whole buy-sell checklist of things that our advisors use. Voluntary termination. Termination for cause. Well, when I see termination for cause, what do I want to see in the agreement? Thank you. Definition. What the heck is for cause? All right, this agreement had a very well-drafted definition. Termination by the members. Again, here. Everything was in the definition section. I wept with tears of joy when I read this agreement. I mean, I'm telling you, I was living the dream. If I were a teacher and had stars to put all over this attorney's work product, I would have done it. Okay? Again, triggering events. What else? Oh, wait, did I go back? Oh, voluntary termination by members. Divorce. How many times do you see a buy-sell agreement that says nothing about divorce, nothing about marital separation, nothing about marital dissolution? I don't know. Do any of your clients get a divorce? Maybe. Divorce should be in there. Conviction of a felony? That never happens, right? Sure it does. Sure it does. As she indicated here, conviction of a felony was defined under what? For cause. It was a great definition, very broad. Bankruptcy, other acts of insolvency, triggering events such as, act of law. I was out in Hawaii for a tax seminar, which was just one of the worst seminars of my life. As I was out on the beach channeling, no, that's not true. So I did a presentation, and I said, well, give me some ideas of some triggering events. What do you think somebody said out there? That they had to go off into active duty. I say, well, I never even thought of that. But it was a good one. Other insolvency laws, I mentioned that. Okay? And all of these things were under this definition of what transfer. Now, you really have to read these, every word. Or if you don't, work with someone who enjoys reading them, or if you have an advanced sales department with your company, let them do it for you. Okay? What else did I have here? The purchase price. Okay, again, it doesn't have to be the same. Death, disability. All of this was laid out in this agreement. You know what? I can tell you, I can probably count on both hands, and only both hands, the attorney work product that I have saved on these really, really well-drafted agreements. Obviously, this is one of them. I saved this. Now I redacted all the information. But there's a lot of things that a really comprehensive agreement should contain. Termination of employment, the purchase price, actually depended upon the terminating event. Okay? I mentioned the payment terms before. Is it a lump sum? Is it an installment sale? Is the note attached? What are the terms of the promissory note? These are the types of things I'm going to put in my analysis to send to Randy. Okay, is it there? What's the terms of the note? Again, the terms of the note were different for death and disability and termination of employment. The detail in this document was amazing. Most are not this comprehensive. Life and disability insurance, remember? Now, this one I had a little bit of an issue with. Okay. At death, it was a mandatory obligation that the company purchased. However, it was not mandatory that the company own insurance. I think it should be mandatory if you have a mandatory obligation. It talked about who paid the premiums. It talked about the allocation of excess proceeds. Most agreements might have a couple of sentences about life insurance. Might mention DI insurance. Well, again, that's real helpful for a buyout. But they do not mention who pays the premiums. Is the owner and beneficiary consistent? How about the allocation of any excess proceeds, right? But there are other insurance provisions that I like to see in agreement that were not included in this one. What about a failure to pay a premium? Can the insured, pay the premium? Will it be considered a capital contribution? Will it be considered a loan? So have something in the agreement that talks about that. Disposition of policies. I leave the business. Should I have the right to buy the policy that the company or my co-owner owned on me? And if so, how is the what? The purchase price determined. Yes.
Would there be a procedure in an agreement that would, in a cross-purchase agreement, where the insured with the other party could force the payment of a premium or some sort of mechanism for that?
Force the payment of the premium by the insured?
Well, you're talking about procedure for paying a premium.
Well, what I mean by that, let's say you and I are cross-purchase, you don't make the premium. Okay, first of all, then do I pay the premium, and is that considered a loan to which you then what? Have to pay me back. But most agreements are even silent on that at all. I got to go really fast here because I want to get couple things. So disposition of policies during life. What happens if I own a policy on you and I die? Like any other asset, it belongs to what? My estate. Well, if you're the insured and you're the survivor, business owner, do you want the right to do what? To buy that policy on yourself from my estate. And if so, what's the purchase price going to be? Or conversely, maybe the company wants to retain it if it's a redemption plan. But the point is, it needs to be addressed in the agreement. What else do I have here? The right to get additional insurance, a requirement to maintain insurance funding. There needs to be a policy schedule, just like there needs to be a schedule beneficial interest. All right? How are disputes settled? I really want to see a dispute resolution clause. Do we really have to go into protracted litigation all the time? Why don't we start with dispute resolution? Okay, I can assure you most of these agreements are just not addressing it. This particular agreement said it was going to be determined by the parties under the rules of the American arbitration or under the commercial rules. I mean, it was very specific as to how arbitration was going to be done, who was going to do it, how the costs and expenses associated with arbitration was going to be allocated between the parties. Again, really, really important things to include. Life insurance, the ownership, I already talked about all this. I want to see these as addendums in the agreement. Trustee, other applicable agreements. These are all the things in a perfect world that makes me very happy, right, that most of the time aren't there. But keeps me employed. All right? One final thought, good, and I ended this on time. Again, I've reviewed, I don't even know how many, and I've certainly seen it all, just like all of you have, you know, very seasoned advisors and seen veteran advisors in the room. Sometimes you have to wonder whether or not your clients should even be in business with each other at all. Now, why do I say that? Now, this came from not this agreement, right? Check this out. If the disability or death of the exiting shareholder was directly and purposely caused by the remaining shareholder, then that shareholder will be removed from the company and receive no value. It's like, seriously? If I purposely? What's another one I saw, right? If there are only two shareholders, the one directly and purposely causes the death or disability of the exiting shareholder, then the entire value, I mean, is this really what needs to be in agreement? If your clients no longer want to remain in business with one another, there's a much better way to do it. First of all, you're going to jail. So it's like, seriously, I was like, wow. You know, you want to see what we call, you might hear it called a Russian roulette clause. You might hear it called a push-pull clause. But essentially, it's a type of clause that enables your clients that if, you know, you and I no longer like each other, can't stand each other, right? We no longer want to do business with one another. Okay, because you're texting, and I no longer want to do business with someone. I'm kidding. I'm not going to purposely kill you or make you disabled. But what that type of clause means is that if I want out, you and I, we want out, okay, I will make an offer to you, and that offer to you will be either an offer to purchase your shares or what? Or have her buy her shares at the price in the offer. Okay, so it's a Russian roulette clause you'll hear. You'll hear it called a push-pull clause. That's a way to get rid of each other, not this. Okay, so my 50 minutes is up. I went through a lot of stuff, and this presentation is intended to be way longer. But I hope that you were able to at least, I want you, you don't have to remember everything, but what I want you to remember is to get a copy of your client's agreement and review it. Okay, and you know, I don't know the resources that you have available to you. You have centers of influence, you work with attorneys, you work with advisors that do work in the closely held business market. Review that agreement, because I can tell you there's a lot of value added that you can bring back to your client. And of course, that value added can really definitely lead to more sales for you. So I appreciate your attention. Thank you.